Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
Hey, hey, fellas, this is Indie Invasion back again, and this is Eric with you, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Mac.
I didn't do it.
What's up, buddy?
What's up, buddy? If it's a crime, one of these days we'll explain that inside joke to you guys.
Yeah. Welcome back to the show. This is the beginning of 2021 for us. So
yes,
you know what? We're almost to a year for doing the podcast.
Is it? Yeah. Oh yeah. We started it after Coastal Con, right?
Yeah.
Shortly after Coastal Con.
So we're getting there. I kind of feel like a lame horse trying to get over that finish
trying
line.
Trying to pass the finish line. I don't think we're not a lame horse, man. We're still going strong, man. We're stretching out our neck in the final corner. What are you talking about? That's crazy talk.
So, yeah, this is our first episode of the new year. And most shows, they talk about their resolutions. And, well, we kind of did that already.
We did. On our new segment.
A new project that we're doing where we get together. We're going to try and do it once a week where we stream live and we just talk about whatever comes to our mind. In our first one that we did, we talked about hobby resolutions for the year.
That's right. Goals. I like to call them goals.
Goals.
Because let's be honest, no one sticks with their resolutions.
Yeah, that's true.
Or else some people do. The really determined people, not me. So you people that are really determined and stick with your resolutions, I salute you. You are an oak. And as Doc Holliday would say, you are an oak. So I prefer to say goals.
If you guys want to check that out, they are on Facebook on the Indie Invasion page, Coastal Con group, and on YouTube.
Yeah. And the audio is also on Podbean.
Yep. That's right. So we had that all up in the same day.
All in the same day. No editing for live.
I like that.
fringe benefits of recording live, I guess, right?
If you guys want to check that out. But what else has been going on, Mac?
Well, you know, for all of the craziness of the last year with coronavirus and all of the continued craziness and stuff, it's nice to know that we have our games, you know, where you can just lose yourself and disconnect from reality and play. And if you go back and listen to the hobby goals, I mentioned that I wanted to start up an RPG again. And I have been playing Palladium Fantasy First Edition
How long has it been since you've done an RPG?
It hasn't been maybe 7 or 8 years. So not as long. I did introduce my nephew and a bunch of his buddies to the Palladium system and they went nuts and they're still playing.
That's cool.
Yeah. They're still playing and they're still having a lot of fun with it. But, you know, we adopted three kids at the same time and the transitions for us at that time, I just hadn't been able to play. So that was one of my goals. So I busted out my old Palladium books and started digging around through them and found my old world maps. And lo and behold, what are we going to banter about today, Eric? But some map stuff.
Yeah. Right? So what are you working on? How are you doing this? So this is a good tie-in. You're getting back into RPG. So I want to hear what you're exactly doing. You got the notebooks all broken out.
I do. I do. So I printed up. I found my copies of my NPC list. So all my non-player characters, where they live, who they are, what level they are, all that kind of stuff, what their job is in the world.
Goes out on the floppy.
Yeah, right. I had to hand crank the drive so that I could get it off of there.
There I go again, showing our age.
That's right. But I did, I had a hand-drawn map, several hand-drawn maps of my world. And I was like, well, this is cool, but that will segue into the next thing. But I wanted to do a neater map. So I was looking around and I found this really cool website, I guess is really what it is. It's called Incarnate. With Inc. being the first part. So it's INKARNATE.com where you can create maps. Now, obviously, in this day and age of the digital world, you can purchase stuff so that you have access to a whole lot more layers and colors and map making tools and everything. But I was just using the free one, and you and I were on at the time just chatting, and it took me 20 minutes to build my world map so that it looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and I know you're playing the D&D campaign with Mary and Xander, your wife and son.
We're currently doing, we're walking through like the basic starter kit that they have in there. So, for a starting place for them, you know, it's kind of like going back to basics and learning how to, you know, just go through a campaign.
Yeah.
And then eventually, cause it's for me, it's my first time DMing.
Right.
I've always kind of flirted with the idea and just, you know, was a player and just that was okay for the time being. But it's one of those things that if you want to play, but there's no one to play with, you might have to just run it. So it's kind of what I determined that, well, you know, if it's something I want to do, I guess I have to organize it and do it. So it's kind of getting me trained in a different mindset when it comes to role playing. And then hopefully it'll get me ready for, I got a big old box behind me that I just got the other day for a bunch of stuff for Curse of Strahd. We have two local players that are friends of ours from the board gaming world that the one guy is a big RPG guy, but he's always running stuff. So he wants to actually be a player. And it's like, I love the world of Strahd and Ravenloft. You know, it's my kind of my theme. It's, you know, that gothic horror.
Yeah. Well, so, I love Ravenloft so much. I incorporated Ravenloft into my world too, even though it's D&D. I think I had mentioned it in the Hobby Goals video that I do. I've got everything, man. I've got Warhammer, Palladium. Oh, yeah, because it's so much. You know, you just make everything. Warhammer, Palladium, Greyhawk, Forgotten Realms, Ravenloft, just a little bit of everything smushed in there, all of the stuff that I enjoyed.
And that's the fun thing with RPG is that world building. You can build whatever world you want. You know, it's role-playing is, I know there's, you know, there's that belief that you have to stick to the rules, the rule books and the campaigns and that are pre-written, but you don't.
I think that's what I loved. And now I know a lot of rule books say this nowadays, but back in the day when, and I have it right here with me, if you'll just bear with me for a second, back in the day when the Palladium first edition came out, my book is so far gone. It is in plastic sheets in three ring binders now because the book fell apart, but I can't remember what year it came out, but it was either late 70s or early 80s. When it came out, and it was one of the first times I had ever seen it written that these aren't rules. They're just guidelines.
Guidelines
for you to play a game. And reading that, I was just kind of like, wow, I don't think it had ever occurred to me. Cause I was a kid when,
well, it's just like we were playing the other day. And they were throwing out all these ideas of, we want to try this, we want to try that. And I'm trying to think within the rules, you know,
right?
How do you work this? And then it just kind of, oh yeah, I can do whatever I want. I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah.
So I, you know, came up with what they need to roll to be successful.
And, yeah.
And you know what? It still fit in the story. That's absolutely the important thing. And the players found fun in it. You know, it was entertaining for them with how you worked, you know, the narrative into what they were doing. So that's a neat thing about role playing.
Yeah. Well, one of the great things about world building actually segues into the next thing I wanted to talk about. So I was messing around with that Incarnate, and we'll talk about a super easy program to mess around in. It was just a couple seconds. I had it figured out. And, I wanted a digital map because I'm doing something else, which is called World Anvil. Now, some of you guys may be aware of World Anvil, and if you are not, man, you have got to go check it out. So it is a paid service. World Anvil is a paid service, but it's basically this massive program that you can build your world in. So when I say build your world, I mean everything, maps, timelines, secrets, characters, your world setting, all of this stuff that you can throw into the game. You can create a new campaign, and it preserves all of that stuff in your world. And it's just, I've barely even begun to scratch the surface mm-hmm. of it. I haven't started really watching the videos yet. I have every intention to. I'm going to dive in, but there's just so much you can do. So just on the dashboard alone in this program, and I can't remember what level I got. I didn't get anything too crazy because I'm just doing a little bit of my writing in there, but you can do articles, you can design buildings, the country that you're playing in, the myths and legends of your land, spells that might be particular to it, what kind of species live there, what's the religion, and you can do this by article. So say, for instance, let's just, since we were talking about Ravenloft, we'll take Ravenloft for example. Okay. So pretend Ravenloft didn't exist. Ready? Okay, Ravenloft is gone. I had to do my Scooby-Doo noise because I got my Scooby-Doo shirt on. Okay, so what you would do is you would go into it and you would create the article. And the article could be about anything in Ravenloft. So the conflicts in Ravenloft, the geography, what kind of items, what's the military units. And I'm literally just reading some of the icons you can click to do this. What's the ethnicity? What's the condition there? You know, there's vampires there. That's the condition. What are some of the characters? What are the organizations there? It's got a spot where you can do writing. So maybe there's a famous poet in Ravenloft that you want to do. You can do a plot, professions, titles, session reports, what kind of vehicles there are, what's the technology going on there? I mean, it is just,
that's endless.
Right. My mind is, and that's just for Ravenloft, right? Or even you could even downsize it. It wouldn't even have to be Ravenloft. It could be
a
town.
Yeah, you can make it like a local town out of real world. And then so it's kind of relatable, I guess, in that sense.
Yeah. But
then you put your fantasy or your sci-fi spin on it.
Yeah. Or if you're doing something that is maybe in the modern world, maybe you're playing Vampire the Masquerade or Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You really are playing in Schaumburg and you're a werewolf going to Adepticon because you're not worried about the coronavirus because you're a werewolf and you don't care.
This ain't Adepticon, it's the Furry Convention.
That's right. So it's just really neat. And I've known about it for a while. I've been doing some writing on there for Twisted and the Drowned Earth. Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit of stuff up there in those for my world building. And I'm hoping with now the kids being back in school, I can focus a little bit more time on writing, which is another one of my hobby goals.
Okay.
So I think you should get World Anvil too, so that you can build your world.
You know, Mary asked me tonight, she's like, when are you going to make a game? I'm like, man, I don't think I have that in me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have the imagination, but I don't know if I have the organization to do it.
So yeah.
But this kind of sounds like something for the people that are like that
yes.
to help organize it.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what it does is I remember being a GM when I was stationed out in California, and I was the one that always had to run the games. And the reason mm-hmm. I always had to run the games is because I liked world building. So even if we were just doing a one-shot adventure, there were these NPCs and these places that were going to become part of your character's life. They were going to become part of it. And your character becomes so much more real to you
mm-hmm.
and so much more important to you that when there's more to the story just than what you created in your head, you know, when you've got this world that they actually live in. I was never a big killer of characters. I mean, you had to work to kill yourself, but if you were working that hard to do it, congratulations, you did. but I think probably the best thing as a GM was if you had to kill a character was not so much that the player was disappointed, but that all the other players were disappointed. that was, to me, that was like, yes, that was a good group right there, because the other four people playing are more disappointed that that guy is dead than the guy who was playing the character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, that's good building. You know what I mean?
Well, all right. That sounds pretty cool, Mac. World building and stuff. I think we didn't intend to begin the show talking about RPG, but that's kind of what we've been doing lately.
Yeah.
It goes along with the goals, different goals,
yep, trying absolutely.
To, challenge ourselves in the hobby in general. I mean, one of my challenges was to work on my half-painted minis. I know I've talked about that before, and I'm actually slowly making progress. I made some room on the shelves. So,
nice.
It's the kind of goal I like to think of as goals that are achievable, as long as you work on it. And
yeah.
It's kind of like, you don't want to think of it as an instant goal, because that's when you kind of, you'll end up letting yourself down type mm-hmm. of thing. And then you just don't follow through. So I'm no timeline, just something I want to work on amongst the other ones that we have talked about together. And,
did you do a spreadsheet for your year painting?
No.
You should.
I need to do something like that.
You should.
You might have to give me an example in the Google Drive.
All right, I can do that.
And then I can just copy it.
I'll do that. Mine's super simple. Mine is super simple.
That's what I need. And actually, it reminds me something that I came across that I want to put on the page for everybody, that I started this last year and I did not stick to it. Some of that had to do with the world closing.
Right.
So it's like you get kind of discouraged, but I got a minis bingo sheet that has different categories that as you work on these projects, you can check them off. So if anybody needs a little help and guidance out there, I might have to put that up on the page.
Oh, yeah, you totally should.
Yeah.
You totally should.
Maybe I'll
We can do a live bingo short.
Right in front of me.
Yeah, we can do a live bingo short for anybody that wants to download it and talk our way through it and figure out what we're going to do and play Go Bingo!
Like that. Get my little marker so I can mark them off?
No, not your marker. You need your little
or paint the stamper.
Squeezy. Yeah, a little paint squeezy thing.
That's it. Well, what do you say, Mac? We've bantered enough in the beginning of the show here, but why don't we get into one of our main topics we're going to talk about? We're going to continue with Drowned Earth, and what did I call it?
Waterlogged.
I said that as a joke, and I think it stuck.
It did. It stuck.
And
it's perfect, though.
It is perfect. And we're going to get into our next faction in the game that we're going to talk about today, and that is the Firm. So why don't we go into that?
Let's do it. There you go. All right. All right, guys. Well, it is time to talk Waterlogged in the Drowned Earth again. And today we are going to talk about the notoriously troublemaking Firm of the Drowned Earth. Eric, do you have the Firm?
I do have the Firm. So
all right.
The two factions I have were the ones that came in the first Kickstarter, and that was them in the first faction we talked about previous episode. Artifactors. Yeah. Yeah. I have yet to explore the other ones yet, other than just the dinosaurs, because I like dinosaurs.
Because dinosaurs, right?
Yeah,
dinosaurs.
I want them to eat people.
That's a very common theme amongst the Drowned Earth fans is dinosaurs, just dinosaurs. So the Firm, let's talk about the Firm. I like the Firm. Now, interestingly enough, I just finished doing the audio stories for the Firm. Now, I've read the rule book at least twice, at least the rules section, and started rereading all of the fluff just the other day. But I finished reading through the Firm, and as we talk through this, I'm reading through it, and I thought to myself, man, these guys are way more twisted than I thought they were.
Yeah, I remember you mentioning that the other day. You're like, these guys are really bad guys.
Yeah, they are some bad dudes. So who is the Firm? The Firm are the gangsters and the organized crime of the Drowned Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They are the nasties, the baddies, and incidentally, the Firm just got a new boss, a new leader for their group. So that's also another thing you can check out. I am not 100% sure if Discover Games here in the States has the new leaders or not yet. You'll have to check that out at discover-games.net. You can go over, they have a web store, you can check them out. And if you are one of our friends across the pond that is listening, or even here, you can, if Discover Games doesn't have it available, you can also pick it up at Wayland Games or order directly from Olmec Games at thedrownedearth.com as well. So these guys, man, I'm telling you, they're bad. They're so bad. They're just, I don't even know what to say. The worst part about them is the leader has a big old Japanese tattoo sleeve. The model does, and all the artwork. And I tried really hard to paint it. And let's just say my firm leader does not have tattoos on his arm. I tried, man. I tried. But that is just way above my painting skill level. Way above. Especially if you look at what he has. It's a very kind of Yakuza.
Yeah. Now, them as a faction, is that kind of like what they resemble? Is that kind of criminal organization?
They are basically every kind of crime in the Drowned Earth. So the firm is kind of an overarching term that just, they're loosely organized. Every firm that's scattered around, every individual firm is going to have an individual boss. Okay. And it's going to have an individual agenda. So Kaneda's crew, Kaneda, who is the leader, is the son of the overboss of what's called the Moon Lake Syndicate, which is one of the regions of the Drowned Earth that the world is set in. So I think we discussed this before when James was creating the world. He kind of, the rule book, he kind of sliced out a section of this enormous world, and that's where he wrote. Which does two things that I really love. One, it leaves him a ton of room to expand his world, just a little piece at a time, because right now all we know is this one little section, the five lakes. And it also gives players the opportunity to do the same thing, because you don't have to wait for James to start making up your own stuff for the game.
Yeah.
So it's really broad in how you can do that. So this is just that little slice. And Kaneda is the son of this big, bad, nasty boss. And Boss Gris, I mean, he's bad. He's bad news, man. He's a tough dude. You don't mess with Boss Gris, nothing. Kaneda is...
He grew up hard.
He did, but let's just say he's a bit of a disappointment to dear old dad. he does not quite. Pretty much the only reason he's not a street thug is because his dad is a boss.
Okay.
And so some of the interesting fluff, you can go back and listen to some of the stories, the audio stories on the podcast. But the new leader that just came out, Boss Castle, or he's an underboss to Boss Gris, and he's a Barangi, so he's one of the big gorillas, and he is a gnarly looking, he's a super cool looking model. He's got his Steven Seagal jacket on, you know. he's really cool looking. And so Kaneda actually answers to Boss Castle, even though his dad is the overboss. So there's all this interwoven animosity and story that's just really cool. And like I said, he's a disappointment, and I don't think he really cares. You get the impression he doesn't really care. He's super arrogant. He's just a bad guy, man.
The kind of guy that you want to see what's coming to him, you know.
Yes,
get
you
him,
want
right?
to see, you want him to you want to see him get it. Yes,
those are good bad guys, though. Those are the kind of bad guys that you love to hate.
Oh, like, okay, so I'm not going to do this in the reading voice, but I'm going to read a piece that describes him from the book. I won't do that. You have to go listen to the story for the reading voice. But it says, the description of him is, these feelings of anger and resentment manifest themselves in his aggressive and spiteful behavior. He's angry with the world and wants to make it suffer. What a pleasant fellow.
Yeah.
Kaneda is a classic hothead. He is arrogant, resentful, lazy, and worst of all, in his father's eyes, unserious. So if he was anybody else's kid, he'd just be a street punk. And that's your leader. That's your leader right there.
Now he's everybody follows him just because of who his dad is. They don't want to tick him off, right?
Oh, no. See, this is where we get fun, because the whole rest of Kaneda's crew is the misfits.
They're the ones. So they're kind of all like him in a way.
Well, not all of them. The last one we get to, not quite. And actually, the next one, not quite so much either. There's some interesting dynamics. I think we discussed this a while back when we talked about the Drowned Earth in a Phantom Dice segment, where what it really boils down to for me with the way that James wrote the crews is very, very similar to, we did a big talk about this on Twisted, because Twisted did the same thing. Mm. You've got these crews, but there's these inner struggles going on between the crews. So you can put them on the table and just play them like they are, and just play a miniature game and move your little metal guys around and make pew pew noises and you know, all the fun stuff that we like to do. But there's so much more depth to it because of all of those little dynamics going on. And again, James did a masterful job in the writing, because this stuff isn't revealed yet.
Yeah.
But the rest of the whys of how come this stuff is happening and where this resentment and struggle and strife goes, we don't know. And it's sure he can write it, but you don't have to wait for him. You can make that story go wherever you want, in my opinion, because I love to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that brings us to my friend. Okay, now I absolutely love this model. This is probably, aside from Boss Castle, this is probably my favorite firm model. And I'm not sure if I said this right in the audio story, but let me tell you an ancient secret that I share with everyone in the whole wide world, especially when I'm teaching Bible lessons. If you don't know how to say or pronounce a really big word, and it's one of those like a dead language kind of word or a made up word, if you just do it confidently, rest assured, they don't know how to say it either. Now, James knows how to say it, so he can correct us. But for the rest of us, it's like, just say it like you know what it is, and it'll be all right. It'll be all right. So on that note, it's Liz Tolink Cho. I think I'm pretty close on
that's
that
pretty,
one.
That looks pretty good to me. I mean, yeah.
So she is one of the Saurian races. So she's a dinosaur person. And she's a very, very determined, and she's your close quarters fighter. She's not very big, so the Saurian models aren't really big as far as the your crews, because every crew has one in it, and they're not really big. So she is kind of an unsavory character too. That's why she's in the misfit crew, but. She got into this school, and I'm probably going to mess this name up too. So they didn't have a lot of money, but it's called the Varakaj, which is a school of, in the Thousand Isles, of assassins. So that's where her parents sent her. They were like, because, you know, that's what every parent does. They go, you know what? I'm not really sure if you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist or maybe an assassin. You know what? Depends on where you want to go to school. But Liz chose assassin, sort of. And when she graduated, it was top of her class. And because they didn't have the money to pay for it, you pay by servitude.
Okay.
So you know, it's indentured servitude for 7 years. And she was bought by Boss Castle. So that's how she integrates into the misfit crew. Now, why is one of the big mysteries that James leaves out there? Because Boss Castle, you don't get to be a boss without knowing what you're doing. So he goes and pays this exorbitant amount of money for this assassin, this trained assassin, and then dumps her in the misfit crew. And it's like, why is she really in the misfit crew?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kaneda, you got to think. He's a little suspicious of it too. He's a little bit suspicious of, wait a minute, why did they drop this high-priced, high-dollar assassin in here? Is it to watch me? Well, probably, Kaneda. Have you seen yourself?
Yeah, he's a little paranoid.
Yes, he's a little bit, and probably rightly so.
Yeah.
And she does not engage with him. at all. Well, obviously not at all, because in the context of operating as a crew, you kind of have to. But like it says in the description, that she's like an unfeeling machine, savage and without moral scruple of any kind. So mm-hmm. Kaneda does like that particular feature about her, because what it boils down to is he's still the leader of the Misfit crew. But I want to know what Boss Castle's plan is. So James, if you're listening, I want to know what Boss Castle's plan is with Liz, because in my preparation for recording, you know, I'm reading stuff and then I read it again and you read it again. And I've read it a lot of times. And the more times I read it, the more I want to know what in the world Boss Castle was up to. Hmm. What is the plan? I must know. So James, get on that. Maybe we'll find out with the pirates when all the cool models come out.
Yeah, that's some more, you know, expanding that little world a little bit more.
Yeah, the pirates are really going to be cool to play into that. And of course, all of the, well, I was going to say the Wayfarers, but all of the new models that are coming out aren't necessarily Wayfarers. I actually can't remember what factions. I believe there's a couple of Artifactors, might be a Firm. I think one of the factions actually got left out for the Gene Splicer pledge, but I'm not sure which one. I'll have to look and see. I think one of them, because everyone was allowed to pick which faction they wanted their Gene Splicer to go into. For those that don't know, Gene Splicer was the top backing level where you got to design a model and you get to pick what faction he was and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So What are you laughing at, Eric?
I ain't laughing at nothing there.
Are you jealous that you didn't do it? No. Are you feeling guilty that you didn't get in and design yourself a model?
No. I'm good.
That's okay. There's some guilt associated with doing it, because it wasn't cheap. I had to check with the boss and be like, well, what do you think? But I have to say, everybody's models that got designed look super cool, but not gonna lie, I'm biased. I like mine best. Go ahead.
No, finish.
What I was gonna say is you gotta like mine, because mine is based on a anthropomorphic hippopotamus and the wrestler Haku.
Well, I mean, you know what, in my opinion, we don't have enough hippo miniatures out there, so you know, that'll make Mary happy.
Right? We need more hippo miniatures. And I need another Gene Splicer, because I've already got another idea.
Oh, jeez. Who do we got up next for the Firm?
All right. Next is... Now, this one is... This dude is twisted. This dude could be in Twisted. He's so twisted, okay? But he's also sort of... What's the word I'm looking for? Kind of sad. So next up is Hosk.
Yeah.
And he is the Barangi. He's the tough in the Firm, because everybody's got a Barangi in their crew. And the only thing that they know about him is he was found in the wreckage of a river caravan, the only one that survived as a child. And he was taken in by a Barangi family and they cared for him. But that right there, so you don't know what happened. It doesn't specifically say. Yeah,
it's a little, there's a lot of space in there, time, yeah, that it's like, okay, this happened, but then later this happened. Right. So what in between all that, you know,
yeah,
happened to him?
It's almost sad, because you don't know if whatever his family was on that river boat, he might have just been a regular Barangi. He might have ended up being an Artifactor. You know what I mean? Or a militia. But because of circumstances, this semi-sad story, don't worry, you won't feel bad for him for long, or you'll feel worse for him, whichever it is, whatever mood happens to strike you. But even young, he was this just nasty, all kinds of behavioral problems. And when you're an anthropomorphic gorilla, behavioral problems can be a real problem if you live where there's humans, because I can only imagine that when he was five, he was, you know, probably 5 feet tall, 200 pounds of muscle.
Yeah.
So probably some serious, and he was always, always very, very violent. So violent that at around 10 years of age, they were in Skyton, which is kind of a lot of stuff happens there. The militia is based in Skyton, the militia that's in the book. But the family that adopted him fell on hard times, and clearly they didn't have a whole lot of sympathy because they were like, you know what? This kid is bad. Let's just leave. Let's just don't tell him where we're going. And that's what they did.
Yeah. So that's kind of sad. And you can see how that could further.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. He really is. If you think about it, Hosk is a sad story. It's like, it's so sad. I'm going to go over and get my miniature. I'm going to take him upstairs and let him sit upstairs with me because I know he's lonely. I know he's lonely. He has to be. So from that point on, 10 years old, Barangi, I'm thinking, you know, 6'3", 340 probably.
Yeah.
But he was on the streets, right? Ends up working for Boss Castle, doing messenger stuff as a kid. And like we already established, you know, Boss Castle is important. And so far we've said kind of not really anything bad about Boss Castle yet, but now here's where it kind of gets bad with him. So he used narcotics to control Hosk. So that was how he was paying. That was how he ultimately ended up paying him. And then of course, once he got addicted, it was in exchange for what he needed. And he just got bigger and stronger and more cruel. And he could have worked his way up. He was in the stories, he's a trusted member of Castle's organization, but because of his addiction and his just massively violent, over the top behavior, he couldn't. He was no good. He ended up beating a shopkeeper to death.
Yeah, too much of a temper.
Right. And it was for a late payment on protection money. It was like, okay, go tell him that he's late on his protection money. And if he doesn't, there's going to be consequences. And Hosk just goes and he's like, I'm going to beat you to death because I'm mad. And And then it was just a downward spiral. And interestingly, this is what I found interesting about this character is you've got this huge Barangi. And again, kudos to James for creating a character like this. One that you can feel sympathetic towards. Because I think if you can't feel sympathetic towards a story like that, you're not really thinking about the whole story for the character. Because, you know, it's just some bad stuff. But this is the other part. And I remember reading this the first time I read it, is that Hosk is ultimately a coward.
Yeah.
Because he's a big bully.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just extremely, extremely violent. And he would much rather come up behind you and hit you than face you face to face. He's... here's the description. He's a cheat and a liar, and he's as pathetic as he is dangerous, hated by most, but occasionally even his limited talents are of use. And the thing is, he fears Kaneda and hates him, and that berserker fury, that violent rage is tempered only by his cowardice. And here it is, this word that he put on the end, man, this is what makes the whole story the sad thing about Hosk. Self-hatred.
Yeah, it's right? It's an interesting concept to have in the storyline because you think about those very complex storylines in Hollywood and on TV and stuff. This is it right here. This character development in our little miniatures game.
Yeah, you know? Hosk is a tortured soul, man.
Yeah,
he's a tortured soul.
He's one of those characters that you truly hate, but you have sympathy for at the same time.
Right. Like I could see my game playing a game and someone like Sage or someone takes him down. And because it's a game about named characters, when you take somebody out, if I take a dude out in your crew, he's not really dead. He's just down. So you play the next game. And I could see the justification for that is someone like Sage taking Hosk down and it being sympathy that stayed his hand from taking him out.
Yeah.
You know, maybe knowing something about the story or something. So he's a very interesting character. He's a tortured soul.
Yeah.
Tortured soul. Who knew Hosk was going to be the big one, right?
Yeah.
Right? Talking about, I think he is.
Well, in so many good stories, it's usually the conflicted bad guys that are most interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And he's just a very, very in-depth character. And maybe that wasn't intentional. I think sometimes when we're writing stuff, stuff is just popping in your head. And sometimes you don't even realize the depth of what you're writing. So I think that that's really cool. Who do we have next, Mr. Hoffman?
Oh, boy.
That's why I did that to you. Go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Remember, just say it like you know how to say it. That's not how you... Mirza Blaze.
Okay, I would have got the Mirza.
Okay, you got that?
And then the Blaze with the silent Y, right?
With the... Well, yeah, pretty much, yeah. The Y is there just for coolness. Yeah. Just so that it's not just spelled regularly.
Mirza.
So, now, she was on the streets from the get-go. So when I very first read the first paragraph, the only person I could think of that immediately like resonated with me in my mind about the character, and now she diverges very quickly, but that first paragraph is Selina Kyle, Catwoman.
Yeah.
That's the first place it goes kind of in my
unstable.
Mind.
Unstable.
Yeah. Because so she grows up on the streets, doesn't even know who her parents were. Only friends were Blades and other street kids, and they were your friends until you had something that they wanted, and then they would take it from you. So that's how she grew up, and she loved the chaos. Now here's where Mirza needed a therapist. Okay, Mirza seriously needed a therapist. So because it says she got a kick out of seeing other kids hurt, particularly if she caused that pain herself.
Yeah.
Okay, so and then he says, by the age of 7, she's running her own local gang. All right, now, first of all, can you imagine the guy that gets jumped by that gang and loses your stuff? You're not even going to tell anybody. I got jumped by 7-year-olds, man. Really? What happened? They took all my stuff. You don't tell people that. So, and then by 12, that's when she was recruited into the firms.
And I like that she's not just a thug, you know. Yeah, right. She kind of had that thug upbringing, but she's more than that.
Yeah, because once she was able to get into the organization more than just living on the streets and scraping out survival is when she realized, because she's your mechanic in your group as far as gameplay goes. But that's what she realized. She was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And then the evil dark twist. She found her favorite tool, the blowtorch. The rest was pretty much history. That's when she discovered, hey, I think I'm a pyro. And she was. She most certainly was. So she's got to the point where she was just lighting everything on fire. And that's when, so I love this part of her story. So the bosses realize, okay, this girl is setting everything on fire. Probably kind of like the Hosk thing goes. It's like, hey, we need you to go and tell this person this thing and then pick up this mechanical piece. So she goes and tells the person, burns the building down, picks up the mechanical piece, and burns that building down that the mechanical piece was in, and then comes back. It's like, okay. So they sent her outside of the city and sent her on a river raider crew as the mechanic. Well, she got bored. So there's only one way Mirza knows how to cure boredom. That's right. She set the boat on fire with the crew members in it and watched it burn. I told you when I was reading the stories and recording them, I'm like, oh my gosh, this group is horrible. Hey, put these people
in a childhood thing where she got pleasure from other people's pain. And she was doing it. Hey, all right.
And then you trace that story back now, and the depth of the writing and the story that's being told is, what does that say so far? Now we've got one person left after Mirza, but because obviously she's been plopped into the misfit crew and actually gets along with Kaneda.
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of, they kind of trust each other, and he can somehow control her
and from setting everything on fire.
You know, this group of misfits, she actually feels like she belongs and has a home.
Right. And
as twisted as that is, but
right. Well, the thing about it is this speaks volumes to the kind of person Boss Castle is, because he's the one that put this crew together.
Yeah.
This is the misfit crew, and Boss, that says something to the character of him. And then one step more to boss Gris. And you're talking about an organization that is essentially this is your bad guy. For me, in my games. Now, there's the Bondsman too, so there's other bad elements within the game. But just looking at it top down from Boss Gris, and then you look at these basically tortured souls that make up the Misfits crew. And these leaders, they're happy to use, manipulate, and throw away the people. This mm-hmm. is your bad guy. You know what I mean? This is your bad guy group, hands down, for me, in my games. But you know what? Everyone can be redeemed. And I'm looking forward to that Hosk story where he gets redeemed, because Hosk's story is just too sad for me.
I don't know about that one.
It's just, hey, look, if I can forgive Hosk, who jumped off of a 36-inch piece of terrain, a crane, and landed on my model and killed me.
I mean, that anybody might be one of those him. You put down the rabbit dog type of stories.
No, I've got hope for Hosk.
Okay.
I'm going to start a campaign, Hope for Hosk. That's it. I'm making a banner and everything. Hope for Hosk. It's coming. So the last one is Papa Vink. Now, you can't really say much about Papa Vink, and I'm going to tell you why. Because James didn't say very much about Papa Vink.
No, I mean, yeah, he's got a very mysterious past.
He is an enigma, which is so great. Because he's one of the ones that really, he doesn't fit. Kind of like Liz.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a misfit as far as behaviorally and all of this other stuff. But one of the things that we know about him is that even Boss Castle treats Vank with respect. Okay, so you got the guy who's not even the leader of the very lowest crew, yet Boss Castle treats him with respect.
Yeah.
And his past is a total mystery. But him and Castle, there's some sort of understanding that goes on there. And the only person... Here's the thing. So it is hands down written. Everyone who knows who Vink is knows that he's dangerous, period. He is dangerous. And on the board, he's dangerous. He's a sniper, and he's a nasty one too.
And he's the medic of the group, which is funny.
Right. So he's going to be as far as possibly as humanly possible away from you. He's like, yeah, I don't care if you die. I know you people. Bleed out. It's okay. But Kaneda is the only one that's disrespectful to him. Now, everybody else respects him because he's dangerous. Mm-hmm. But Vink puts up with Kaneda's disrespect. So again, we've got this little enigma. Okay, why? What's going on? Why did Boss Castle put these two in the Misfits crew? And I love the last line. And this is where, so I do, in my regular job, I do things like literary criticism. So paying close attention to text and what it says and plural and singular words, this is important. It says, the last paragraph, the firms, not just this firm, but the firms. So like we said in the beginning, you know, they encompass this whole region mm-hmm. and they're these little pockets of criminal organization. And they all have these weird and unusual characters. And then James says, but Papa Vink is the most enigmatic. And perhaps even the most dangerous.
Yeah, that makes you think about, okay, what more of a story is there? You know,
right.
You want to know that backstory of him, and how does that make him fit where he is now? Where can that story go? You know,
and one of the other things that you have to consider is this: when you have Papa Vink on the board and someone takes him out, you just open the book to page 159 and go, no, he's not dead. Read this last paragraph right here. He's not dead.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put him back on the board. He's going to shoot you again. Because look, James said right here, he's perhaps the most dangerous in all the firms. So I'm just going to put him back on the table. You can't kill him.
Is that
how it works?
Oh man. What was that old Rutger Hauer movie? Hobo with a shotgun. You don't know his whole story.
That's right. He is the hobo with a shotgun. Hobo with a shotgun and machete. So that's the firm. And who are we going to talk about next time?
We got the Bondsman next, Bondsman. I believe. And is that's one of your favorites, isn't it? Or do you like the militia?
The militia's my go-to faction, okay. But I really like the Bondsman models.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the Bondsman models, and they are tough. They have they're your armor guys, and if you get yourself in the right position, you can be shooting at them all day long, and they just go, I'm coming over there, and I'm going to chop your head off, and that's essentially what they do when they get over there, because their Barangi is not a drug-addicted coward.
Yeah, that is... That still kind of, you know, amazes me that he put that kind of depth
right
to the story of a character.
Yep. You know? Well, here you go. Well done, James. Well done, sir. Which incidentally, on a completely different different note, the just edit that out. I don't know. I just derailed.
Okay. All right. Well, that was our quote waterlog for this episode. So we're gonna go ahead and get into some Phantom Dice.
Ooh. Bring us in.
All right, guys, welcome to Phantom Dice, where we're gonna talk about what's fancying us game wise recently. And I'm kind of excited to hear about this one, Mac. It sounds kind of cool. Tell me about what you got to talk about to the people.
Well, I think that you should play it because I don't have anyone to play it with.
What's this game?
This game is a game by NSB Games called Hull Breach. Now, I discovered this game. Let's see. I am trying to remember if it was at Con Carolina's or if it was at Mace. And I'm not sure. It was one of the two because they are actually, I don't know if they still do, but they did meet in the same hotel, and it was kind of, you know, one was more game, more miniature driven, and the other one was more sort of con, like fan con driven, more like a fan convention kind of thing. And the game Hull Breach is now, it's not something I normally do. I'm not a big card game player, yeah. But it is a card game. And my son, Fernando, and I went and he went over. I was demoing games and he went over and picked it up, checked it out, and was like, "Hey, Dad, can you buy this game?" And now he doesn't play it with me anymore. But that is beside the point. This is probably the game I'm going to make him play with me because I gave him some extra video game time, and I'm going to bribe him by bribing him to play a game with me. So anyway, it is a card game. One of the things I don't really care for in card games, even though I do like Pokemon, is the idea that you have to keep buying cards. Now, don't get me wrong. I like opening a booster pack as much as the next guy. I'm all for those Dollar Tree Pokemon ones that go in there and buy a bunch of them.
That's the gamer crack right there.
Right, exactly. It's gamer crack. I am all for opening the cards. But I don't know if it's power creep or unique cards, because
collectible ones it is.
Yeah, because I don't know the games that are like that because I don't play them. Well, Hull Breach was a little bit different. So they introduced the game as... So basically, it is set in the future in space. And basically, you've got corporations and militaries and militias, and they've got all these spaceships are out in space. I'm not going to get into the full story. We'll throw a link up in the description that it's hullbreach.com is where you can go and you can check it out. And they actually have several little short story novels. They're not really short stories. I guess they are. They're probably about 35, 40 pages each. Okay. And there's a few books. Which are pretty cool too. So each deck is one of those factions. Okay. And there's 10 different decks.
Ten decks. That's that. So, and each deck is themed to a play style.
Yeah, basically you can interchange cards.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You can switch out some of the cards if you want to, but you can play them right out of the box and they're good.
That's a lot of variety.
It is. So you've got the Anaheim Manufacturing Corporation, and I'm going to read the mottos of some of these because they're funny. It says, if we don't stock it, you don't need it. The Xeros Orbital Shipyards Engineering, the future today. Then you've got the Deep Space Colony, the Stellar Tax Gate. Okay. Yes, that's exactly what I said. Tax Gate. Yeah. And then the Bank of the Galaxy. That one just cracks me up. For all your banking needs. You've got the RDF Skyline Defense HQ, Merchant Marines Logistics Center, Independent Shipping Outfit, the Marine Training Division, and my favorite, the Rattlesnake Confederacy. Because I don't care if that deck just stinks. The name is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it all sounds pretty cool. I mean, it's just, it sounds very exciting to me that you can pick up one of these decks and just play the game. But it does have that flexibility to change things up.
Now, here's one of the really cool things about it that I liked is it still involves dice rolling. Dice rolling. Okay. Yes. So when you go to attack with your ships, they will all have attack values and the other ships will have defense values. Okay. And it comes with D10s. And you can you advance. So I guess the closest thing I could compare the attack with is like when you have your Pokemon that's up or your magic card that is up in the front.
Yeah.
As opposed to what's on your bench or whatever card game you play. And you attack with your ships. You get to choose which ones you want to attack with. But here's the really cool part. You can play with more than two people.
Oh, I like that. You don't see that a lot in card games.
Right.
You know, in any deck building or pre-constructed, you don't see a lot of that.
And you have to be careful. Because if three of us are playing and I send all of my ships to attack you and they're up, then when the dude sitting to my side gets his turn and I have no ships left to defend my base.
Because they already committed.
Right. He's going to swoop in and jack me up. And it's also, it's got a little bit of resource management.
Okay.
So you have a couple of different sources. You have currency, which you get to spend per turn. And as you add different cards to your base, you're generating currency. So how you play them out.
So it's helps. A little bit of like a engine building then. A
little bit. And then you also have a resource stockpile. And all of that stuff is necessary for you to build ships, to upgrade ships. You do boarding parties. You do all kinds of really cool stuff. And it is actually a very fun game. And I am not a card game player. It's like we totally blew everything out of the water in this one. We talked about RPGs in the front and then cards on the end. What's wrong with us? Holy moly. You're out of control. But the other thing is there aren't unique cards that you can't get. Now, I do have three cards that I've gotten, and those were special ones that came from them being at conventions because mm-hmm. they almost always go to Mace. They actually weren't there this past year, COVID, you know, all that stuff. But they're almost always there and at Con Carolinas or one of the other. I might be mixing that up. So they have those cards. And it's just a really fun game. I also have a limited edition deck of the Rattlesnake Confederation Outpost. So I'm excited that I own that too, just because I like to have stuff. I'm a stuff kind of guy. But I do have two of every deck, Eric. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah, you got to send some of that my way so we can play on Zoom.
Just come down. Just come down and you can play right here. It'll be best.
I mean, this kind of sounds like a type of game that's in my wheelhouse because I play board games and card games. Right. I mean, I played card games for a long time. Just it was hard to get a group together for the longest time early in my gaming, I guess, career, hobby, whatever you want to call it. So card games were easy to play one-on-one. But this sounds very intriguing to me. I'm going to have to check this out.
Yeah, well, they also come, I don't know how they're still selling them. When mm-hmm. I bought them, they were available in box sets.
Okay.
So it looks like they still are. I'm on here. You can buy decks individually. So there's two different, it looks like they only have one box set still available. But they have the box set that I first was introduced to was called In Defiance of Dictators. And that's the one that has the Deep Space Colony. It has the Stellar Tax Gate. It has the RDF Skyline Defense. And I think those are the ones that it has. It's got, four decks. The starter box is $45, which is not bad at all. You're getting four decks. You're getting all of the chits that you need and the little tiny tokens for tracking your resources and all that. It comes with the little novel book and then a nice little tactical manual. It comes with the D10s that you need. And it's just, it's a good buy. The cards are good quality and it's worth the money. If you like card games, highly encourage you to check out Hull Breach. It is definitely worth it. And it also comes with a little cheat sheet that you can keep right next to you that will get you playing the game in no time at all.
Cool. That sounds cool. Yeah. Like I said, I'm definitely going to check that out because that sounds intriguing to me.
Well, do it.
Old classic. Flashback.
Flashback, flashback, flashback.
Yeah, we got the boop de boop de boop de boop de boop.
That better be how Flashback gets intro.
I've already done me singing that.
All right. So, Eric, we're in the Flashback section now.
What? Yeah. So, what do us old-time gamers have for everybody today?
Well, you know, I had to look this stuff up because I am not an old gamer. I'm a young fellow. So I had to look this up. I was not aware this game even existed. Okay, not really. I bought this game when it was brand new when it came out. And this Flashback one, I am not sure if Games Workshop plans on re-releasing this or not. I know their Specialist Games has been really pumping out some of the older stuff, and it has been well-received as far as I can tell.
I kind of hear rumors about this one just based on what they've done the last few years.
Yep. I believe there have always been rumors on this one. But this is Battlefleet Gothic.
Yep.
And it was a fun game. It was a little bit clunky. It was a specialist game. It wasn't the smoothest thing in the world, and ships were hard to find. This one, I don't believe, and I could be totally wrong, so if you guys are out there listening, I don't believe it was released in very large quantities in the U.S.
Yeah, it may have been very limited in the U.S. and kept in the U.K. And time frame, when was this about? Like the late 90s?
I believe so. I think we talked about that the other day, didn't we?
Yeah, we were trying to determine that.
1999.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Not too old, but it's old enough. And the, you know, normally when GW has stuff they send over here to the States, they convert to inches. Although nowadays it's like everybody kind of uses inches.
It's like a standard almost. Anyway.
Right. But back then they would use centimeters still. Well, this book is written out all in centimeters. Even the measuring sticks were in centimeters.
Oh man, that would probably just blow my mind.
Yeah. Oh, math. Oh no.
Except
you realize that it's easier in centimeters, but that's not the point. That's not the point. We're not having that discussion right now, but okay. So probably my favorite thing about this particular book, and of course, this is a podcast, so you guys can't see this, but there is a section in it which harkens back to the old days of GW to me, is it's got the art of shipbuilding, so collecting and painting your fleet. Now, at the time, they did have a handful of ships out when the book came out and were releasing more, but it has some nice, it's got a how to build your table.
Okay.
Your space table, some easy celestial phenomenon using ping pong balls and stuff. And then, of course, you have to have a how to build an orc ship. Because yeah,
those old articles that GW used to do were, I'm sure, something that influenced a lot of us.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, that's the one thing I loved about, you know, their White Dwarf was, here's a little project, you know, and how we did it.
Yep. And it has a scratch building section in it.
That's cool.
It was a fun game because it was, but before there was X-Wing, there was Starfleet Battles. And Starfleet Battles was super crunchy.
Yeah.
Super crunchy game. And this gave you kind of the same feeling. I mean, obviously you weren't doing Star Trek starships, but you were doing these huge capital ships having space battles. And that's what was introduced in this game. And I'm sure that there was something out there that I didn't know about that was already capital ship combat, but this just resonated with me because I was playing Warhammer Fantasy Battles. I was neck deep in orcs for Warhammer 40K. Mm-hmm. And it just, I would gobble up anything that Games Workshop threw out. I didn't care what it was. I would gobble it up. And I was super excited about this. I still have my box. Man. I still have my models. Some of them haven't survived so well. Unfortunately, if you try to find any of them, like on eBay, you better be prepared. Yeah, you better be prepared to offer up a kidney if you want the authentic ones.
I had some pop up the other day. I don't know how they knew that we were thinking about planning on talking about this, but I had a bunch of stuff pop up, probably because I got in my head to look through Blood Bowl stuff too, you know, another specialist one of them.
Yeah.
Because they have the new version of that.
Yep.
And so these popped up and I was looking at these and I was like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, cause we were talking about it the other day and I remember seeing them back in the day, but just never, I didn't have the group that would have been, you know, their attention would have been towards this game.
Right.
So it's like, I knew of it, but never really saw it
right.
type of thing. So it's one of those things that it's just like, you're interested in it.
I was only able to play a couple of games.
Yeah.
So I've actually only played it a couple of times. But one of the things that I liked was that it had torpedoes similar to Starfleet Battles. Uh-huh. So in Starfleet Battles, you would basically fire and forget torpedoes, and they would move on their own towards the target.
Okay.
Well, these have that too. They have direct fire weapons, but they've also got, you've got these torpedo tubes, so you can fire this stuff and just, it's amazing. And you had firing arcs, so you had to have positioning was important.
Okay.
It was a little less important in Starfleet Battles because you had these really wide arcs for the majority of your weapons. These ones, it's a bit more particular. And it was just the couple of times that I played, I had a lot of fun. The plus side is if you can get your hands on the rules, which I have no doubt that it's out there somewhere on the internet that you can at least read the rules.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of STL files if you have a 3D printer.
Ah.
Yeah. So because I've looked, and probably the only reason I haven't printed any is because I am currently out of filament. So I need to order some filament. But I'll probably print a few of them up. But it was really quite a fun game. Didn't have a lot of time for development and working out kinks and stuff like that, because you can play test a game so many times, but until you release it out into the wild and really get people out there trying to break stuff in it, you don't know what you need to fix and what might be overpowered or what have you. But the base rule book is good. So it's got your ships from the Imperial fleets.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chaos Fleet, which those were the two that came in the starter box. But it also has the Eldar Corsairs, which was nice. Now, when I bought it, those ships weren't available, at least not in the States. They may have been available in the UK, but they weren't available in the States. And of course, you know, they always had the orcs. They always had the orcs. And so the orcs were also in this book, but they also ended up developing. The Necrons were released. I believe the Tau were released as well. So they managed to flesh it out a little bit. Yeah, but as was typical with the specialty games, it fell to the wayside, and I imagine it will eventually come back.
My prediction is they will, just based on the fact that they redid Space Hulk, they redid Blood Bowl. Games that were around at that same time. I'm trying to think of other ones that
Necromunda.
Yeah.
Is another big one that they did.
So they've revisited these at one time specialist games. So we may see it.
Yeah. And it would be cool, because especially with their model making having improved. I mean, you know, that's 22 years ago.
Yeah.
So the improvements GW has made in their plastic models, just phenomenal. As we have said many times before, this isn't a GW hating show by any means, but I would be really impressed to see what they could do with the models, because just a couple, it was in November when I was at Discover Games, one of the fellas that was there had just bought himself a box of Tau Aeronautica Imperialis models.
Yeah, those things,
they looked
phenomenal.
They looked really good. If Discover Games had the starter, Mac would have walked out of there with the starter. But fortunately, when I walked over there, I was like, oh, darn, they only have some extra ships and can't play with just extra ships. So I'm just going to walk to the other side of the store and pretend like I didn't see that. So I did manage to escape that game, but I'm not sure if I will escape it because I do love my sci-fi stuff. And the only flying game that's not in space that I play is Wings of Glory. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was this episode's flashback. So, you know, your games you're talking about today gave me ideas for games for next show. So
awesome.
I guess everybody will have to wait what I come up with next show.
So. Okay. I'm excited already. I'm excited already. But don't forget, guys, that you can catch us on Facebook, on our Facebook page. You can also, if you can't get us on our actual Indie Invasion Facebook page, you can always hit us up on Coastal Con as well on the Facebook mm-hmm. group over there. You can always, always, always please check us out on Podbean. We got lots of cool stuff there. And if you like what you hear on Podbean, do us a favor and hit that follow button and you can stay current on everything else that we're putting out. But you can also catch us on Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and probably a bunch of other ones that we have found that we're on that we didn't even know existed, but apparently they're out there. And that is really where you can find us. CoastalCon 2021 is coming up next month. We are still planning to go ahead. We're expecting it's probably going to be a little bit more of a friend gathering than anything else, but
lower key, just kind of hang out, have some fun, and enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, play some games for a couple of days, and if you happen to be in the area and you're comfortable coming, please do. You can check out the event on the Coastal Con Facebook group. It's got the location where it's going to be and the times that we're going to be having it. We'll be doing the February 26th and 27th. Did I get that right? Or is it the 25th and 26th?
Nope, you got it right. 26th, okay. 27th.
I don't even know when my own convention is. Holy moly. Somebody get that guy some help. But it will be a Friday and Saturday this year in hopes of generating a little bit of income so that when all of this COVID stuff has moved on and we are back to some normalcy, that what we will do is have a little bit of a nest egg to do it up big.
Yep. Yep. And if you guys had any questions about that, or if you have any comments, suggestions of things to talk about, like for our new show, Shorts.
That's right.
Feel free to drop us a line at indieinvasion@gmail.com. And if you really like the show and would like to support us, you can do that by introducing a friend to the show. And if you're so inclined, find us at patreon.com/indieinvasion, where you can help us pay for those new headphones for Mac.
Now, just so folks know, is we struggled with this a lot with Patreon as we discussed what we wanted to do with that. Yeah. And we do not have any exclusive content on Patreon. All of our content is available. Some of it we just put up on Patreon, but it's available whether you become a patron or not. So pop over and check it out because there are some videos over there that you're not going to find in other places. So you can just check out some other stuff that we're doing. And like Eric said, if you're so inclined and want to throw a quarter at us, feel free.
Yeah. A quarter for a gumball.
Quarter for a gumball. Or you could bring a quarter to Coastal Con and you could put it in my dice vending machine and you could walk away with three or four dice.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. And if you are so inclined to come to Coastal Con, we will also have Coastal Con and Indie Invasion dice available. So yet another reason to come and lots of stuff still in our raffle. So guys, remember when you're out there playing those games, having fun. And if you're me and Eric rolling those ones when you need to roll 20s and 10s, prepare yourself for the invasion.
Bye guys.
Later.
I usually get the Folgers Black Silk because it's really dark coffee.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, I'm going to try this Black Rifle coffee. So that's who we need to sponsor us. They're big. They could give us like $20 or $30 a month. Or coffee. I mean, either one would be good for me. Man, it's hot down here. I'm going to take my hot socks off. And you already mentioned it anyway, so.
Well, here, I'll just break into
song.
No, you don't want to hear that.
Oh, maybe we do. Because it could make it into
outtakes.
Oh, you know,
you want to hear me sing like Fred G. Sanford,
the blooper reel. Yeah, remember how Fred,
remember how he used to sing? He'd be all like, "Dare you." It's all good.
No, it's not.
I know. Because, I mean, you sounded okay, but it was like, you sound a little bit distant. And I was like, I was wondering because I was still picking up stuff like your mic picks up. So I was like, I was wondering.
Sounds better now, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, you sound crisper.
I'm crispy. 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 All right, let's knock this thing out.
Yeah.
So I can go to bed because my children have been driving me crazy and making me sleepy.
They're wearing you out, huh?
They are. Nando's 10:30.
Do I have to get off at 10:30? Let's see if I can stay on a little bit longer since I can sleep in tomorrow.
It's not because you can sleep in tomorrow, but what is a little bit longer? Quantify that for me.
I didn't have a Pacific time.
Well, if you can give me a Pacific time, maybe add an S. Can you not?
Tommy needs his beauty sleep.
You need your beauty sleep. Eric said you're not attractive.
Dang.
I know, right? He should move down here so that he can say that to your face, huh?
That's just for the ladies.
He wants you to be beautiful for the ladies.
He'd probably say I already am.
No, he said his lady already thinks he's beautiful.
Oh, silky smooth.
Silky smooth. You can go till 11, chump. On one condition, you have to play a game with me this weekend.
Weekend?
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
30 minutes on this.
So
I have to play a whole game with you.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like a halftime trade.
Tell them we're recording it, so.
I make the rules.
We got it on record.
No, it's not. You don't have to take the deal. If you don't like the deal, don't take it. Bye, Felicia. That's the deal. Am I doing flashback too?
Yeah, you got Battlefleet Gothic.
Oh my gosh, I got to do everything.
I got to do everything. I don't know this stuff.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. All right, let me get these decks out here.